Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
I was in so, I mean, my God, just, I didn't even listen to the guitar. It was just like pure magic. It was so inspirational. It was pure magic. Like I still, like literally still, I can't, it's so magical to me. I can't put it into words. I just love it. And it just sounds like pure fairy dust.
This is Essential Tremors.
I'm Lee Gardner.
I'm Matt Byers. The idea behind this show is to have musicians and other creators talk about songs that shaped who they are. We're not looking for favorite songs, necessarily. We're also not looking for songs that they'd choose to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What we're looking for are songs that have significance to them. Songs that might have changed the course of their creative lives, or their lives in general. Mary Timoney's involvement in, and impact on, the Washington, D.C. indie music scene dates back to her first band, Autoclave, in the early 1990s. Her next project, Helium, was formed in the Boston area after her graduation from Boston University and was highly and widely regarded in indie circles, releasing 5 records on esteemed New York label Matador Records. She has since gone on to record several solo records, as well as start the band X-Hex and join Wild Flag, a project involving members of Slater Kinney. Her first solo record, Mountains, was recently reissued by Matador in celebration of its 20th anniversary. The first song Timoney chose as being formative for her was One Rainy Wish by Jimi Hendrix.
Okay, so first of all, it was really interesting to think of, you know, like songs that I retain like in this way, because it was really hard to separate out like songs that made an impact on me as a musician from songs that I love the most. And it was, yeah. They aren't necessarily all, like, one of the songs I chose is definitely an all-time favorite And the other two, like, I wouldn't really put in that category, but it's just, I just have, like, really, you know, I had really strong reactions to them when I heard them, which is exactly what your podcast is about. But it was an interesting exercise to think about. But anyway, so it was cool. But yeah, so the first one I chose, this Hendrix tune, I don't know. I mean, Hendrix is definitely my all-time number one musician, and just always has been. And he's in a category for a lot of people, obviously, and for me, that he's just, you know, it's like there's people that are good at things, and then there's people that are just like 100 times as good, you know. And to me, I mean, obviously he was in that cat. He was a complete genius. And but anyway, and I know everybody knows that, but it's, I don't know, he's just beyond. So anyway, so I chose this song because I guess like a okay. So I had like, I didn't listen to a ton of music growing up. Like my parents weren't like totally, you know, they weren't like record collectors, and they listened to like classical radio and stuff. And also my mom, oh, one weird thing is my mom really discouraged my brother and I from buying records because they were too big. So we could only buy cassettes, even though we did sneak in some records, and my dad had records. I don't know what her deal was, but she doesn't like stuff. So we weren't like, yeah, we weren't like, oh, she like really discouraged us from buying records. So anyway, I had like found this Hendrix cassette of my brother's. And then I think both of them were my brother. I had Access Full of Love and Our Experienced. And like, I just got a Walkman, and it was like, it just like changed my life, because the first time in my life, like I could listen to music like in my ears. And I don't know, it's just like, probably doesn't make sense to people now, because that's the only way, you know, one of the main ways we probably all listen to music is like intimately in your ear, you know, inside of your ears. The speakers are like, but anyway, so that was a huge thing. I had a Walkman. I just like remember walking around in the spring of like 1987. I was in 11th grade. I was like a really depressed kid for a lot of my, you know, growing up, really pretty, you know, I was a sad kid, but I finally, like, I got into guitar, and that really helped me out of my depression. And I started going to this art school in DC, which is Ellington School for the Arts, and studying guitar there. And for the first time in my life, I felt like really hopeful, because I was working on something that I loved. And I felt like if I worked on it hard enough, I'd get better at it. And it was just a very hopeful feeling. So all this stuff is like, I'm telling you, is all wrapped up in this song for me when I hear it. So I just remember listening to my Walkman, walking home from school, listening to Access Bold as Love, and it just being the most hopeful sound, like the whole record. But anyway, so I associate all that stuff with listening to it, but the actual song itself is just like, obviously just so genius. Like the sounds, the way the drums work together, and the guitar sounds. I still don't even really know what he's doing, and I don't want to know. The guitar like weaves around in this way, like it's almost like playing its own, it's like its own counter melody to the vocal melody. It's just so good, the whole thing. And it's like the music kind of, to me, it kind of like it explains what the lyrics are about, or so it sounds so much like the lyrics. And it's just gorgeous. But anyway, so I just really associate that record with this really hopeful time in my life where I had like come out of this depression, and I was like in school playing. So the high school I went to is this arts high school, and we just practiced music. And it was just really a great place for me to go to school, and a great place in general. It's just a really great school. It's a public art school in DC. Yeah, I don't know. I remember my guitar teacher, Mr. Newman, he's this jazz guy. And I remember him saying, I was like, who's the best guitar player, Mr. Newman? And he was like, well, definitely Jimi Hendrix. And I associate that like with it. I mean, and like that, you know, my guitar teacher was like, came from a totally different place. He was like a jazz guy, but he said Hendrix was the best. Anyway, I also associated it with like rock and roll, like, because like, I don't know, like, it was like, it wasn't rebellion anymore to me. It was like something like my teacher said Hendrix is the best. Like, I don't like this. I mean, I'm not like getting into this music because I'm a rebellious bad teen. Like, this is actually beautiful art, obviously. But, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, I was from the 80s and like, you know, I don't know. I grew up in DC. There's punk and stuff and I was into that, but I just really am still from the generation where rock and roll was associated with rebellion, you know? And it was literally a big realization to me that like, oh, wait a second. Music is art. Adults do music. It's not just like crazy kids, you know? Cause I was like in the punk scene and like, it really was very rebellious. You know, one thing I really realized as I was like thinking about these songs is so much of the stuff that I thought about with this music is like, has to do with the way that I heard it, you know, like it was on my Walkman. That had so much to do with its impact on me.
So you said you weren't quite sure what was up with this. Don't buy any records thing. Was it a small house? Or, you know, like a mid-modern sort of minimalist thing going on?
No, I don't know. I don't know what it was. I don't know why she didn't want us to buy records. I really don't. I mean, she does have a thing about not having a lot of stuff, but no, it's just, you know, I don't know. I haven't really figured it out. It's an interesting question. Like, I don't know if she was trying to limit our, I mean, obviously she was trying to limit something. I think it was just that she didn't want to stuff around, but yeah, it was strange, I guess. It made me think like music is not, you know, I'm sure at some level I was like, oh, I'm not supposed to like music or something at some deep level. But at the same time, she was very encouraging, you know, in other ways for me to do music. So it's just a weird combo. I don't know. I got to think more about that.
Well, so it sounds like during this period you were learning to play guitar, or you had started to learn to play guitar.
Yeah.
And then you heard this, you know, you heard Jimi Hendrix, who, you know, as you were, you know, informed, was officially the greatest guitar player ever.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Was that inspirational or maybe daunting? Because I think a lot of people, you know, would hear someone that good and maybe be...
Oh, I don't know. I was in I mean, my God, I didn't even listen to the guitar. It was just like pure magic. It was so inspirational. It was pure magic. Like, literally still... it's so magical to me. I can't put it into words. I just love it. And it just sounds like pure fairy dust to me. And I don't even want to know what he's like, as someone who teaches, you know, I teach kids guitar. Like, I will not touch those songs with anyone because like sometimes when you try to figure things out, it kind of destroys the magic. And I did try to teach a couple kids Hendrix songs, which is, well, first of all, they're not easy to teach or play. But yeah, I want to take it apart because it's just perfect how it is. And I don't want to touch it. And I get the same reason. I don't even really listen to those Hendrix records that much. Cause it's like so pure and genius to me that it's like, you know, when you, okay, this, I know it's sounding crazy, but like you can't, you know, like some religions, you can't use God's name. because there it lets go some of the magic. It's the same thing with, like, he's pretty much, to me, like, if I'm any religion, it's like my religion is art, you know, and he's a genius, so I worship geniuses. So it's pure God to me. You know, that song is pure, like, God. Anyway, I love it. Like, it makes me almost want to cry. I love it so much. Above me and you.
The second song Timony chose, as essential to her formation as an artist, was Waiting for My Man by the Velvet Underground.
Associate with a very specific time in my life, and a very specific way of listening to the song. Like, One Rainy Wish, like, I was listening to it through a Walkman. The next song, the Velvet Underground song, after college, I went to pick up my brother's car that he left in San Francisco, and I picked up my friend Maria. She lived in this, like, hippie house called, like, the Moon House or something. I went to San Francisco. We hung out in her house, and then we proceeded to have this kind of awesome cross-country trip back to DC. She had three tapes that we took in my brother's car. It was Velvet Underground, the Banana record, Can. I was weird. I remember all of this visually because I can't pronounce the record. It's the one with the can on the front of it. I don't know. It has that weird name. And then also this, like, Sly and the Family Stone record. But anyway, so we listened to all three of those. I mean, it's like before the internet, you just, like, you know, it's like you had a record and you listened to it over and over again. It was such a different time. It was just such a different time. Such a different time. So anyway, I had this experience with this Velvet Underground record in that car. First of all, the cassette player, I found out later, it was very slow. So we were listening to this music all, like, it was like, I'm not sure how slow, but, like, how many BPM slower, but considerably slower. It was like, what you called, like, sludge or it's like, it was like scissorup, not scissorup slow, but like, it was probably like 10 BPM slower than it was really recorded. So that really had a probably influence how I heard this stuff too. But up until this point, I grew up listening, you know, going to hardcore shows, and I was around the whole 80s hardcore thing. Like, I loved Fugazi and loved, you know, like, Rites of Spring and stuff. And I knew, I'd heard of music that had been, you know, was subversive or whatever, but I just didn't really get it, I guess. I don't know what it was with this one particular song, but something about it was just so subversive to me, and I just had my brain ripped open by it. Like, and I know a lot of people say that about the Velvet Underground, and I'm one of those people, but it just tore everything I knew about music apart. And it was like, there's three chords in the song. The drums aren't even really playing, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of it has to do with the drums. You know, because the drums are just playing every quarter note, do 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 do, yeah. And something about the way the rhythm guitar and the drums are working together under the lyric. Well, first of all, the lyrics are obviously what totally draws you in. And the way his delivery is so good. And then something about the way the music and the lyrics work together, it just makes you feel like there's something he's not telling you, or like the music is telling you something different than what the lyrics are telling you, you know, like he's telling you this story about like getting drugs or whatever, and like that it's fun and it's cool, but then the music sounds like agitated or something. It's just, there's something really deep going on. I feel like in a song, maybe when they wrote it and they played it, they didn't, you know, it's like everything is so subjective. And like, as a listener, songs, I'm sure, take on their own life, you know, that maybe the artist didn't mean, but that's what it meant to me. And it just ripped open my brain. And I was just like, oh shit, like music can be two chords. And it just was so subversive, and it just rearranged what I knew music could do or something. And fucking Lou Reed's just a genius. And I don't know. It's just great. Obviously, everyone knows. I'm not the first person. But anyway, yeah, so that's my take on that song.
Had you started playing music out yourself yet? Had you started playing in bands yet?
Yeah, I did. I had a band called Autoclave in DC, and it was the music that we played. I very much not in this vein. It was you know, we were going for like intricate little parts that work together and stuff. So maybe that's another reason why this sounded so different and interesting. And then after, yeah, after I went on that car trip, and Can too, on that car trip, I got super into that Can record. But anyway, I guess I just realized how much lyrics can do, and how little you know, here's the thing about Velvet Underground, like they did so much with so little, like two chords, and it's just so huge. That I just realized you can be so powerful with just like what you don't say and, or what you do, you know, with something like that, or something, you know, the words can be so powerful, and in just your also just his delivery. You're just like, what's he talking about? Like, just so he's such a good, you know, delivery. It was just so brilliant.
I think a lot about, not every day or anything, but you know, I probably haven't heard that song, and it's among your list. It's the one I didn't go back and listen to because, you know, it's in my head, and right. And haven't heard it, probably actually listened to it in maybe 4 or 5 years, but, and I'm, you know, I will take the risk of embarrassing myself here. It's like, up to Lexington 125, sick and dirty, more dead than alive, I think is how it goes. And you know, ever since I heard it, however many years ago, it's like, up to Lexington 125. It's like, that was slick. That was really, it's like, you know, he's like getting to the end of the line or whatever. And I know he studied poetry in college, but yeah. You know, it's like, that's just such a weird thing to do. And I mean, it's like,
wait, 125, what is 125?
I've always assumed he was talking about like 125th Street.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
Okay, and you right. know, I don't know, maybe I could go to Genius or something that didn't exist in 19 whatever when I first heard this song, and it will enlighten me that that's not what it actually means. But you know, it just always struck me, it's like, you know, you're right, that's pretty slick. That's smart. That's good lyric writing. And, you know,
yeah.
And he was relatively speaking, I mean, he was Lou Reed already, of course,
yes. But
relatively speaking, he was a kid.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, but yeah, it's incredible what comes out of people's brains. I mean, thinking of like all the stuff that Hendrix did before he died, he's 26 years old. I mean, it's just crazy it's crazy how fast people develop, like from little babies into adults, and like all the things they do and learn, and so fast. I don't know, humans are kind of cool. You know, they do some wild stuff. They really think of some weird, crazy, cool things.
So, you know, at least two generations of people have been influenced by the Velvet Underground and have taken a lot away from them. But I wonder if that really happens anymore. Like, do any of your guitar students ever want to learn?
No, good point. No, the only, you know, I right now I just mostly have little kids. So I don't have a good take on that. But I did have one student who is now in college and she's really, more into. So everything I think of like as her it comes through like one person. So I'm not an expert, but I have noticed, actually I've taught some other people her age recently and they don't, in my experience, go back that far, you know, just like we didn't. I didn't. I went back to the 60s and these people that are her age, I believe are going back to the 90s and, you know, mostly, but I could be wrong. And everybody's different. I don't know. I actually did have some teenagers like 5 or 6 years ago that were into like every genre because it's, well, the thing is like, okay, here's the thing is that obviously the hugest difference between these generations is that every genre is available to them in 2 seconds and their minds are so open because they can generally, I think they're just not shocked as much. Like that's like when I heard this Velvet Underground song, it was shocking to me. Like, I can't explain why, because my, you know, it was like a different language. And like, we don't really have that experience anymore. Because people can hear lots of different stuff very easily. So yeah, I feel like we came from a different time period. We well, obviously did, but from, it's like a huge generational shift or whatever. It's like a huge divide in how we listen and understand music. Definitely. Yeah.
The final song Timony chose as being crucial to her was All Is Loneliness by Moondog.
Came along and shifted the way I thought about things. I had been in Helium and been on the road a bunch and was going through probably the first episode of something that I've gone through a bunch of times now of just being like, I don't want to play rock music anymore. I'm sick of this shit. Like, it's hard. It's so hard to be on tour and not really making any money to come home. Like, especially when I lived in Boston, have, you know, come home and like not have enough money to like live for more than 3 months without having, you know, I had to get temp jobs and hospitals and shit. And it just like was really hard. So I was definitely at that point where it's like, all right, I've done, and a lot of people get there and they stop. But I kind of did, but that's key. I keep going back to it because I love it. I keep going back to music. So anyway, I was in one of those phases where I was like, all right, I'm not sure if I can play rock music anymore. So anyway, so my boyfriend at the time worked in a record store, Ash, who worked in Your Ear Records in Boston, was bringing home all these CDs. And we were listening to a bunch of Moondog at the time, and it just happened to be on the record player or CD player a lot in our apartment while I was kind of going through this, just like throwing away rock music in my head. And the thing I mean, and so I really associate Moondog with that time. I think the thing that really I latched onto is that it's just not a genre. It's not, it's its own genre. Like, and this guy, Moondog himself, was just his own person. And I just find that so inspiring in itself, regardless of, you know, regardless of what he made, his whole thing is inspiring. I mean, I love people that are just willing to put themselves out there and be themselves, and not, you know, just do art, I guess, in such a bold way. So, yeah, I mean, he has a really cool story. He was like, he's kind of this, you know, genius musician, and like he was blind. He went blind, I think, as a teen, and then made, you know, I think he made records. I don't really quite know his whole story, but I do know that he busked on the street a lot in New York, and that's how he was sort of known. But anyway, so it's really inspiring music. It's not really, you know, like the percussion. I don't even, you know, it's like a rain stick and, you know, hand drums, and there's a lot of rounds. The melodies are in rounds. And anyway, so it just, I think I was really inspired by the instrumentation and stuff on those records, to just not make rock music anymore. So, and then I made a record, first solo record I did called Mountains. Is actually, it's getting reissued tomorrow, comes out tomorrow. And I made that around the time that I was listening to his records a lot.
When I saw that you had picked that, I wondered if that wasn't the connection, because, mm-hmm. you know, there are parts of that record that are very much kind of stripped down, you know, like you and piano and percussion.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sort of felt like a little bit of a reset moment, maybe. So
I think I was just kind of like starting over in my head, just like going like, I know I want to be, you know, I love making music and I like being creative, but I don't necessarily want to make rock music. That's where I was in my head at the time. Yeah. Right.
But, you know, you've sort of gone back to rock music since then.
Yes. Yeah, I've had a lot of phases. I get tired of stuff. I you know, just sounds. Sounds get, you know, you get, it's just like, you know, yeah. I'm trying to think. If you always wear like the same sweater all the time, you probably get tired of it. It's the same with sounds. Like if you always play with distortion, maybe, you know, after a couple of years, you'll want to play without distortion because that sounds more cool. Sort of that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, and if you can do all these things, why not? So.
Sure. Yeah. It keeps it interesting.
Years ago, so long ago that I don't even remember who told me. Someone told me that you can do anything you want in this world as long as you don't make a lot of money at it.
Whoa. Wait, let me think about that. That's like the story of my life. That's pretty much sums it up. And it's, you know, to be honest, there's rewarding things about both ways of working, I'm sure, but that's the one I chose. So there's not a lot of music money in, like, you know, right, playing rain stick on the street, but there's people that are going to do that, and I love them. And like, why else be in the world, really? You know, that's just, I chose that. That's what I chose when I was like 15. I was like, I'm going to be one of those people that I probably would have ended up being a busker, you know? My brother did. My brother was a busker for many years all around Europe. He's a totally incredible musician and has never made any records or anything. He's written hundreds of songs. He plays guitar like tapping with two hands like Stanley Jordan. He busked all around Europe for a long time after college, 5 years or something.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the particular busker in question, I mean, you know, we just spent 10 minutes talking about Moondog, and he's been dead probably for, what, 10, 20 years? So.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's a gift, you know. That's one thing I've really realized in this pandemic is, like, music is a real gift to people, you know, because when you, right, it's like we're sitting here talking about him because he's given us something beautiful, and it's you know, it's a really cool thing. Anyway, I appreciate that when people make cool music. It's fun for me because I get to listen to it.
This has been Essential Tremors. Essential Tremors is produced by me, Matt Byers, and Lee Gardner. Essential Tremors is distributed by WYPR Baltimore. To get in touch, get more information, or buy Essential Tremors merchandise, go to essentialpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.